Hello there, boys and girls, and welcome to another episode of Circling the Bases, proudly a part of NBC Sports Edge. I am your host, Colin Henderson. Joining me today, as always, Mr. Christopher Crawford. Chris, welcome to the end of the regular season. It has been a grind. It has been a haul, but we have made it against all odds and against our boss's better wishes. We made it all the way to the finish line. And not only is today, obviously, a recap season episode that we are going to have today, but a special episode on top of that. As Chris, this is episode 100 for the two of us. That's right, a century mark for Chris and Kyle as we are doing the pod, which is, who would have thought 100 episodes ago we'd still be sitting here spewing our nonsense into a microphone?
The Paul Rudd, not us gif. That is absolutely applicable. No, it's great. It's fun. And you know what, Colin? Let's talk about some history that just happened about 5 minutes before we started recording. Let's talk.
Let's talk about all of it right now. As Aaron Judge, finally, after painstaking weeks, it feels like months, it feels like,
oh my
to
gosh,
get to this long. Point, Aaron Judge, number 62, over the fence. This is, as a Yankee fan, this has been the thing that I've been looking forward to all year, since suddenly this became like a thought in the far off distance that I might actually get a chance to see. Sure. I never genuinely thought I'd see another 60 home run season, maybe ever again in the post steroid year, especially considering in a non steroid year, we were very rarely close to even getting close to this number. And the fact that we are here is just incredible. The last 2 weeks have been a little jarring, I'm sure, not only for every Yankee fan, but I can only imagine what it's been like in Aaron Judge's head.
Sure.
But especially with everyone throwing him nothing but sliders outside in the hopes that he would just roll over on one. So finally gets the home run. Could not be happier for Aaron Judge. Could not be happier for the Yankee franchise. Could not be happier for everyone surrounding this. And also, as a Yankee fan, I could not be happier that this is finally off of his back, because I've got number 28 to look forward to. As every Yankee fan knows, it is only about World Series championships. And the fact that this is finally off of his back, he's got to be like 10 pounds lighter right now. Well, it's Aaron Judge, so at least 50 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of back there to carry.
Yeah, 50 pounds lighter at least with Aaron Judge as we get into the postseason. I wanted this off of his mind, and now it finally is. So congratulations to Aaron Judge. This has been a truly incredible season. I'm so glad I was finally able to see it.
Yeah. And no matter what you think about, like, the numbers above him, the numbers below him, there's no doubt that, and Colin and I kind of talked about this before we started recording, setting the all-time record for the New York Yankees in home runs is a big deal. It's different than other franchises. This is not, you know, all due respect to my Seattle Mariners, like, hitting the 57th home run for the Seattle Mariners is not the same thing as hitting the 62nd home run for the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. It's just not. I mean, I jokingly told Colin before that it's something like 20% of Hall of Famers are New York Yankees. I don't think it's actually that high, but I don't think I'm that off.
It's not far.
I mean,
there
are a lot of legendary players, and he just did something that no New York Yankee has ever done before, and no one in the American League has done before. Before you even ask me, Colin, no, Aaron Judge is not the all-time home run record holder for a single season. He is not anywhere close to the all-time home run record for the all-time season.
Unfortunately, I agree.
But it's still awesome. It's still something that Aaron Judge, and especially, you can't help but go back to the fact that the Yankees were negotiating this guy's contract in the public, basically trying to make this guy feel bad for turning down the money that he did. And all he did was have one of the greatest offensive seasons of this century and a lot of others, too. Well, there's only two centuries that we've really been playing, but it's still.
I mean, if you want to get technical, it's three centuries. We got a couple in the late 1800s in there.
Yeah, so in the 33%, in the 33rd percentile of centuries, this is pretty darn good. No, it's great to see it. I think it's also big for Judge, I think, because the Yankees clinched that bye. Mm-hmm. There was going to be an awful lot of days with him thinking about not setting that record if he wouldn't have hit the home run as we're recording on Tuesday night, or if he wouldn't have hit it on Wednesday. You're talking about Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday with no baseball games, mm-hmm. and him thinking, man, I just had to hit one and I couldn't do it. I think Aaron Judge's confidence is never really going to be a true issue. I think the fact that he turned down the contract that he did tells you that Aaron Judge's confidence is never going to be an issue. But he's a human being. And thinking about the fact that he wouldn't have set that record, I think would get to anybody. But he did, and congratulations to Aaron Judge. Truly one of the most amazing seasons and one of the most amazing offensive fantasy seasons that I've ever seen.
Especially in a world where offense overall has been slightly depressed this year.
Sure.
Like the idea that if you were to say any year that he could possibly do it, it wasn't the 2019, you know, like bouncy ball that essentially existed out there where everyone was hitting 35 plus home runs. Like it was this year where we were talking about like a deaded ball that maybe isn't quite carrying. We talked into the intro part of the season, like for certain players, it's going to lose like 10 feet off of their swing. And that 10 feet is going to mean to a lot less home runs. Sure. Well, guess what? Aaron Judge is too damn big to do all of that. He is going to be just fine. 62 in the books.
Yeah.
Like you said, for the history that the Yankees have, it's really impressive to get to this point. 61 years after 61. In classic Yankee fashion, it just rounds out and feels right. And it is it's special to watch what this season has been. So again, congratulations to our boy. But we have an entire season
that just happened that was pretty interesting today too. So just after we were talking about that, the Mets became the first team to do so. Well, it happened up once this year, but it doesn't happen very often. They hit three straight home runs to start a game today.
Without Marte in there.
Yeah, that's right. It was done also by the Twins on 6-9-2-22. Nice. But it is not something that is accomplished very often. So, yeah, and New York is having
a nice
little
– Who is pitching against them?
Somebody on the Nationals, so it doesn't count.
So it doesn't matter.
Roger Maris Sr. is going out and saying it doesn't count right now. I was thinking
that about time Roger Maris Jr. finally gets to go home.
Yeah,
the Yankees have been basically shipping him like he's the 27th man on that roster for like the last 2 weeks while he's been there for 60, 61, and 62. Finally, Roger Maris Jr. gets to go home.
Roger Maris Jr. is? He is that annoying political ad that you've been seeing right now from the guy who has no chance of winning right now.
Yeah.
That is exactly where Roger Maris Jr.
They're
is.
Like, oh, God, I see him again. Again?
Yeah, have a great life, buddy, but I really hope I never hear your name ever again.
Yeah. Well, it'll be like in a couple of years we'll start hearing his name again, like, oh God, is it election season again?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
So like I said, coming up on the show today, it is the end of the regular season, so we are going to hand out our regular season awards right here. As well as recapping some of our favorite memories from the season. Guess what? One of mine just happened to me. So just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. Contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There's also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Bengals and Ravens in our Sunday Night 7 contest. And that is a tasty little matchup on Sunday night. So I am very much looking forward to locking in for that. Go grab an opportunity for that $100,000 by downloading the Sunday Night 7 contest. So let's get to some of those end of season awards now. And again, for two people like you and I who have the season started, you know, far months earlier, we had spring trainings before their spring trainings to get ready for this season. And before we get to all of the awards, let's just talk about where we've been from a season. This season started with a lockout. And I feel like that feels so long ago, but it should be mentioned that the season was very much a question mark more than any season since 94. When we are talking about, like, was the season going to start? When was it going to start? Were we going to get 162 games? And what was this season going to look like? What was the landscape going to be? You and I did an emergency podcast back in, early March when we were about to do this, when all of a sudden we looked down at our phones and agreements are made and let's hop on a pod. But it's pretty amazing to think that when we started this process, we were doing our rankings and stuff in January, February, all in the hopes that a season would start at some point. We have made it all the way through the regular season, and we played 162. And I'm not sure I would have bet on that back in January, February, when things looked icy cold.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Like, I was all but sure that we would have a shortened season. And, you know, it took basically everything going right, and also took just the fact that owners really like money. They really, really, really like money.
They are big fans.
And the best way to get that money is to play a full season. No, I mean, it was a fun season, too. It was a season that, you know, there were some really bad baseball teams, but it feels like not as much as 2021. Like,
it doesn't feel quite as
top bottom heavy now. You know, there were teams certainly like the Nationals, and I think the Pirates were very fortunate to get to 61 wins, if I'm being completely
honest. I'm pretty
honest.
Sure I lost a bet somewhere because of that, by the way. Thank you for that backdoor uncover.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, there's multiple teams that have run differentials below 200, but there were some really solid baseball teams. And we also saw, and I'll talk about this a little bit later with my favorite moment. We saw.
Talk about it now. Come on.
The two longest postseason streaks in baseball come to an end. And both of those were over 10 years. One of them significantly over 10
years. Literally double the other.
So that's going to be fun. And, you know, I'm just kind of surprised to, like, the American League, like last year we got four teams winning 90 baseball games in the American League. And, you know, we're going to get, we will only get two for sure this year, but we're going to maybe get four in like the 85 win range if Baltimore can end hot. Nope, they can't. The best they can do is 84 and 78. I'm just really surprised by like the fact that 86 and 87 wins are not only going to be enough to get into the postseason, even with this extra wild card, but enough to do it substantially. Like, they're going to get in easily with those amounts. It was just a really surprising year. We've got the Judge year. We've got years like Alcantara. We've got a quality start streak that was unbelievable that we probably under-talked about, especially in today's day and age where starters just don't go deep into ball games to get that many quality starts in a row for Framber Valdez. It was a good year. It was a weird year, but ultimately, I'm just glad it was a year that we got completion. It was it started late, and there were a lot of weird stuff. It is so weird to me that the Seattle Mariners are playing a doubleheader today that was scheduled. It wasn't a makeup thing. It was actually scheduled to be played on October 3rd. But if that's what it took to get a full 162 games, so be it. And I'm super excited. Even with a watered-down playoffs, I'm excited for these postseasons.
And we also, I mean, let's mention Pujols here in this conversation.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This. I mean, we're only talking first ballot Hall of Famer somehow pulling back the time and hitting, what, 25 home runs somewhere around there? I lost track of the last thing. He just hit 703 last night. I mean, just a season where I remember Drew, our resident St. Louis fan, in our preseason showcase with all four of us, talking about how he was like, look, I asked him about Pujols being signed with the Cardinals. He goes, I don't love signing nostalgia. Like, I really want to win this year. And Pujols is just a piece of nostalgia that we're going to put on this team. And boy, was that wrong, because he turned into a valuable member of a team that wins the Central. And you know what? Who knows if this is the same team if Pujols is not on it, especially for the second half of the year. It's just it's astounding the difference that he was able to roll back the clock and have truly one last, and this is the thing that gets you emotional about sports. Like, this is him having one last season in the sun with his team. And with that jersey that he's going to retire in, he gets that moment, he gets an opportunity, and he takes such an advantage of it that he's able to break 700, to break all the rest of those records and get it there. This, you can't draw up a storyline any better than that.
You absolutely can't. And to be fair to Drubert, who I love to make fun of as much as possible.
Of course.
He literally, just a spoiler alert, we're doing a show. He got the format of what we're doing on Thursday completely wrong. Like, it's very hilarious to me. But Drew was not wrong about the Albert Pujols signing.
No.
There is no way in Hades that you can tell me that the Cardinals were counting on Albert Pujols to have an 895 OPS.
They shouldn't have.
That's what makes baseball the best. Yeah. Because It's fun to be wrong. If we were right about everything, do you know how boring the sport would be to have 6 months of just like, well, this is going to happen for this team.
I say,
this is going to happen for this team. That would suck out loud, and we would not have, it would not be an interesting show whatsoever. And sure, there were some, I knew the Dodgers were going to be really good because everybody knew the Dodgers were going to be really good, and they won 110 games. But stuff like Albert Pujols is what makes this, you don't see this in football and basketball. Every once in a while, there's something weird that happens with like a football team that discovers like a power eye trap play that just can't be stopped. And somehow they go from winning 3 games to 11 games, or a quarterback that we just didn't think was going to be good, or a basketball team, a player makes a massive jump in his ability to shoot 3-pointers and he becomes so much better. But very rarely does it affect how the team plays.
Yeah.
The St. Louis Cardinals do not win this division without Albert Pujols.
I agree.
They absolutely don't. And part of it is the play, and there's very little evidence behind this, and this is me being anti-analytical for one of the very few times. There was something about him being added to that team with Wainwright and Molina that I think just clicked. And that's awesome. It is the unquantifiable, while frustrating, and analytic people are right to dismiss it because if they try to put a proof of concept to that, it's not going to work. They're right to dismiss it. But the fact that it happens, and that's what makes sports, and particularly baseball, such a gosh damn beautiful thing.
Yep. Could not agree more. Preached literally all of that. There's something about, it's rare that you have a moment in any sport where kind of reaching where you have like that beautiful balance between trying to like be nostalgia and trying to live like the good old days and have all of that stuff while also at the same time being super competitive and living up to the moment in that spot. And the Cardinals found a phenomenal way of just driving that line this entire year with all three of those players that you mentioned. And how weird is it? And I don't want to, because they're in the postseason, the season's not over. I don't want to start writing, you know, obituaries just yet. How weird is that team going to look next year?
Oh, it's gonna
all
be so
three wondering. Of those guys are not going to be on it. It's going to look end of, I mean, I don't want to Yankees this up, but it's going to feel very end of like core four Yankees of just like, wait,
sure.
Rivera's not closing out games anymore and Jeter's not playing short. Like, it's going to be very weird when it's not like Wainwright to Yachty with Pujols ready to belt one. Like, it just going to feel weird.
I will say, I know that it's not guaranteed. First of all, if I was Albert Pujols, I would be coming back next year. I would be coming back to be a part-time DH, and I would just see if I can be hit another 25 home runs and see if I can get into that.
Can you think he's going to hit 25 home runs again? That'd be enough.
Based on what I saw this year.
I mean, fair point. He's on a heater.
His bat speed improved so much this year. And some of that, I think, has to do with the fact that there was less pressure and yada, yada, yada. But I will say this. I do think Wainwright's coming back this year. I think Wainwright has pitched really, really well. And
All three of them played great.
They have.
It's not a question of it's not a question of ability anymore. It's just strictly do you want to ride this all over again?
Sure. The fact that Molina has already taken, which by the way, got really underreported, taking the managerial job for Team Puerto Rico to me
is love
just kind of the sign that that's not going to happen. But you're right, it is going when those guys are away. It's funny to say because Pujols has been away from St. Louis for over 10 years, but it just looks so much more right. It's not like the Angels' color scheme is so different from the Cardinals that it's like, was so weird
it was
or off
jarring putting. To the eyes. Yeah.
But there's something about that STL logo on his head. And it might be the pizza, man. It just might be that crappy, crappy pizza.
Yes, that's it. All he needed was a little Provolone cheese. And all of a sudden, are we sure? I mean, it's not technically cheese. So are we sure there's like no performance enhancing anything in that quote cheese? Like, I just want to make sure. Like, has anyone tested it? That's all I'm asking.
There's something performance about it. I don't know if it's enhancing though.
Yes. There you go. There's a performance issue there.
Yes.
All right, let's get to some fantasy. Let's get to some fantasy awards here. Let's start with a fantasy MVP.
Oh, this is gonna be a
Chris,
tough one.
I can't imagine that you give me a different answer than this. And that is Mr. Aaron, middle name redacted Judge.
Yeah.
And these are numbers. All right. So he's got a 310 average. That number at least jumps up to 311 or 312 as I'm speaking right now. 62 home runs, 131 RBIs, 16 stolen bases, an OPS over 1.1. Just absolutely astounding numbers. Like we've said, we won't harp on him for too long because we already did for a little bit in the show. Yes. But a truly top, like a top 10 season offensively all time, bar none.
Yeah.
And in a world where, look, fantasy MVP wise, if you were in a points league, even as good as, like, if you were in the ESPN league and Ohtani counts as two players, like, Ohtani is the fantasy MVP and it will be impossible to ever beat him for obvious reasons. But if in a overall, like, real life MVP standpoint, Ohtani is having such an incredible year, you need to have literally a historic upon historic year to potentially wrestle away an MVP award from him. And that's what Aaron Judge did. And it's just incredibly impressive to see what he's done. I mean, I would have no problem if you chose Judge or Ohtani, but boy, Aaron Judge this year, for where you got him, he was a third round pick in most leagues. Like, this is astounding value for what you got.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. If, and again, we're going by Yahoo stuff. If Shohei Ohtani was two, was one separate thing, then I don't think anyone is ever topping him for fantasy MVP. It's just not
possible. From fantasy standpoint, it's impossible.
It's impossible. So, but because that's not the way they do it, and we respect the way that they do it, Aaron Judge, and it's not close. Like, he has provided homers, RBIs, average, stolen bases. Like, the only thing he didn't do was pitch, and that's the reason why Shohei Ohtani is such a special thing. But literally, like, one of the truly great fantasy seasons in a Yahoo league or a league where Shohei Ohtani is two different things. It's like as not close as it can possibly be.
Yep. All right. Give me your fantasy Cy Young then.
So this one's a little closer. And if you go by Yahoo rankings, this is not the number one pitcher. Justin Verlander is the number one pitcher. He is ranked fifth overall, an incredible year. But I'm giving it to Sandy Alcantara because of the fact that he made more starts, got you more innings, and got you a bunch more quality starts.
Yeah.
And again, Justin Verlander was fantastic. And if we did a fantasy comeback player of the year, I don't think this is even close. Like, it's literally end of conversation.
I didn't even bother making that a category. Otherwise, we'd be talking about Verlander. Yeah.
It would be a weird comeback category to talk about too anyway. But yeah, to me, it's all contrary just because he was consistently dominant through the entire season. All due respect to Justin Verlander. All due respect to Alek Manoah, some other guys who absolutely deserve to be in this conversation. But consistency matters in fantasy baseball, especially from pitching. And so I think you have to go with Alcantara.
I agree with you there. It's Alcantara for me as well. Look, 228 and two thirds innings
pitched. And it could have been more.
And it should have been more. I mean, he didn't pitch this. They skipped him in his final start, which would have been tonight.
Right.
So he would have had at least another four, five, six plus innings there. What gets me for Alcantara here, six complete games.
Yeah.
Six complete games. This is a pitcher that does not exist anymore in today's world where they go eight innings and say, I want the ball for the final three. Alcantara basically had to slap Mattingly in the face to say, like, don't you dare take me out of these games.
We
saw at least two games where Mattingly came out to the mound in the ninth inning and Alcantara was like, you get the hell back into the dugout. Like, that's how this is going to work. So, I mean, he was a special player this year. Look, nothing against Verlander. He's going to win. I think he will win AL Cy Young.
I don't think it's a doubt now. I mean, between him, Cease,
and McClanahan has fallen off a little bit.
Yeah.
But
and Cease had a couple of bad starts as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and again, the idea that coming 39 years old, coming off of Tommy John and doing what he's doing right now is borderline offensive to the 20-something year old players who are unable to do it. He's 39 years old and was able to just pop right back into his old self. But Alcantara, just absolute stellar this year, vaulted himself up into, if it weren't for the fact, the only thing that's holding back Alcantara from a fantasy standpoint is that he doesn't advocate, is that he doesn't strike out quite enough people. Is literally the only question mark around him. And also the fact that he's on the Marlins, which means that he doesn't get quite as many win opportunities. But I mean, if it weren't for if he could strike out just a few more people, if that ticks up even slightly more next year, we're talking about a guy who is, I mean, am I exaggerating when I say a top three pitcher in the game? I'm not sure. If he upset K per nine to get over nine per.
Absolutely.
Top three.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I give you a fun stat real quick?
I would love a fun stat.
So the six highest ranking pitchers in Yahoo, I'm just going to give you their preseason ranks.
Okay.
51st, 50th, 81st, 25th, 94th, 161st. That's the top six. Inside of the top 20.
And read off those names just so that way.
Okay. I'm not going to read the last name because we're going to talk about him.
Deal.
But Justin Verlander, 51, currently 5th. Sandy Alcantara, 50th, currently 10th. Alec Manoah, 81st, currently 12th. Julio Urias, 25th, 15th. That's the closest one.
That's the closest
one. Yu Darvish, 94th, 17th. And Redacted, 161st, 18th.
Wow. Just nuts.
Crazy.
Absolutely nuts. And just shows you, like, look, we can only project so much from a fantasy
thing about starters, man. We talked about it last year. That's the reason why I am anti taking starters early.
Yes, you are.
Because every year there are people like this who come. Now, Urias didn't come out of nowhere, obviously. He had a fantastic season. And honestly, might have been the Cy Young, if not for like kind of a clunkiest start in April and May. Like,
he's been
really,
phenomenal
really
since.
Phenomenal since then. But that's the thing. Is there are always pitchers like this that you find late who make these jumps. It happens every single year.
All right. Well, let's talk. We're going to move over to fantasy value, Cy Young and MVP. And let's start with the Cy Young here, since I know you're about to bring him up. Who is your fantasy value Cy Young?
For me, it's the guy that I redacted. It's Zach Gallen, who was ranked 161st. And look, he had success prior. And I think we probably overrated Gallen's mediocre 2021 season, on top of the fact that I know a lot of people were concerned about where are the win chances going to come from the Diamondbacks, because they were awful last year and weren't very good this year, but certainly good enough to get him 12 wins, a 2.46 ERA, a 0.89 whip, which the only pitcher on this list that has a lower one is Justin Verlander at 0.85, 19 quality starts. Had that unbelievable run there where he didn't give up runs that didn't get talked about. We talked about and stuff that hasn't been talked about. That didn't get talked about at all. Mm-hmm. Like, and I get it. There was this middle linebacker that was hitting home runs and was about to set the record. I totally understand why that's a bigger story. But like, Zach Gallen was an elite fantasy option last year. And I don't think there are some other candidates here, obviously. Yu Darvish, another one, 94th. Was great to see him pitch like the pitcher that San Diego was hoping to get. But like, Zach Gallen completely came out of nowhere may not be the right story. But to say that he was great value for people who took him in the middle rounds is quite the understatement.
ADP 144, just an absolute steal from where you're at on that front. For me, fantasy value Cy Young, welcome. I mean, Spencer Strider. Undrafted in every league for obvious reasons, started in the bullpen, but 11-5 with a 2.8 ERA, a 0.99 whip, 202 strikeouts across 131 innings.
Sure.
The strikeout numbers are astronomical for him. Sixth in most strikeouts in the National League, despite pitching for many about 60 innings less than a lot of other players who are active on this stuff. A K percentage that is higher than any year Jacob DeGrom has ever pitched. This is the kind of strikeout numbers that we as fantasy people absolutely go gaga over, because this is, you just don't find them very much. Again, and the idea that he was undrafted, you picked him up as like, oh wow, he's a plucky middle reliever who's getting a bunch of strikeouts and a good K per nine. And suddenly he turns into a must start every single time, regardless of opponent type pitcher in his rookie year. I mean, the ceiling is just so high for him moving forward. And you want to talk about a value. You can't get much better of a value than really a top 20 pitcher that you did not have to draft.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind that this guy, he ended up finishing 60th, but that has to do with the fact that one, he wasn't a starter to begin the season for the Braves. And two, like the managed innings and the fact that he went on the injured list, you know, really. But like, for when you had him there, there's no denying that him and Gallen are the two guys. The only other guys I wanted to shout out, Tyler Anderson came absolutely out of nowhere to have an unbelievably good season. Nestor Cortez was ranked 157th, who's going to finish right around the 50th best pitcher.
Lowest ERA in Yankee history since Guidry.
That's impressive.
That's incredible.
Tristan McKenzie had an outstanding season, answered a lot of questions, and I think will be a much higher drafted player next year than he was.
Tony Gonsolin, he hits the IL, but wow, I mean, an ERA sub 2.5 and just wins on top of wins when you're talking about that W category.
Sure.
Some really great value picks out there, and really just shows, like you said before, if you are patient when it comes to starting pitching, if you're not someone who goes up there and grabs it super early, you can be just fine. You can be absolutely just fine. Let's talk about your fantasy value MVP.
Yeah, so this was close. There's a lot of guys who were drafted in, you know, that 120th to 150th range who ended up being close to top 20 players, but literally someone who was a top 20 player this season was Dansby Swanson. And the reason for Dansby Swanson's drop really was the depth of shortstop. There was no question about that. But also just like he'd never put it together for a full season. And there were some ups and downs a little bit this year, but it all added up to a 279 average, 25 homers, 18 stolen bases, which was really big. And then driving in 96 runs in that loaded Atlanta lineup. All due respect to some other names, but like if you would have told me that Dansby Swanson would be a top 20 player, there's no way in heck I would believe you. Or I'd wonder, okay, there's only like 40 players playing baseball anymore. So that seems like a weird sport now. But yeah, Dansby Swanson for me, deserving of that most valuable MVP in terms of where he was drafted in 2022.
On top of that, think about where he is considering he had a garbage first month.
That's a great point. He was dropped.
He was in many leagues, he was dropped. You spent a mid-round pick on him. He came out of the gate flat, and you were just like, okay, move on. I was in multiple leagues where he was dropped, and wow, what a phenomenal pickup that was for whoever was able to grab him. Truly a top 20 player this year. You just wanted to see the consistency from him, and really from about June 1 onward, you saw everything you wanted to see. And by the way, we talk about Judge going into a contract
year. I was just going to say.
Way to hit it, Dansby, because he is a free agent at the end of the season. And wow, did you want to talk about someone who might have upped their contract value like 75 to 100 million? Dansby Swanson might have been one of those guys.
And you know, there's the one thing I was feeling. I feel great for Dansby Swanson that he's going to get the bag. There's no question about it. And I'm always happy.
Yes.
It's not the best year, however, to be a shortstop free agent.
No, it's not.
Because there are some guys that are going to get paid. However, there were some guys who were going to get paid last year. We were kind of wondering, is Javier Baez going to be the guy who has to settle? Javier Baez didn't have to settle for jack crap, and he will absolutely. Dansby Swanson from somebody. Kind of wonder if it's my Seattle Mariners.
I would love that spot. Although that would move your
my son goes to second base, and I think that's actually where he should be playing. If you take a look at the metrics, JP Crawford is in the bottom 2 percentile in outs above average.
I'm no mathematician, but that's not good.
That's not great. But and defense at second base is going to matter an awful lot next year. But yeah, last year
Cedric Mullins might have been the go-to 30-30 player for the Orioles, who was just an absolute value steal. His teammate Anthony Santander, also phenomenal. Look, 243 average, but that's a little misleading because of A, his slugging percentage, and B, just the very poor start they got to the year. But for if you were looking for power, that was something you did not expect from Anthony Santander. ADP 401, so way off of draft boards, but ends the season, or I shouldn't say ends the season, but currently with a game left, 33 home runs, 89 RBIs, and 76 runs. You expected absolutely none of that from him. I mean, you expected 30% of it, 40% of it, maybe, on a good year. No, 33 and 89. This is going to be a very interesting player when we talk about 2023 drafts, in the sense of like, how do you value this really outlier season in comparison to the rest of his career? But a special season for him, and anybody who was able to grab him, like I said, 401 ADP means that you got him for free. So that means he was nothing but just free value for your team for the remainder of the year. Just an absolute value MVP for me.
And I think you can't ignore the fact of how much he did in September. Like from September 1st on, he hit 10 home runs and he had a strike there. I would just happen to be covering every single one of these games where he hit multiple home runs in three or four games.
Yep.
And if you were one of those people who was playing in the postseason at that point, your league may be playing a little bit too late, but I would say that's awfully impressive. And it's never been a question of talent with him. Like when the Orioles took him with the Rule 5 pick, it was, okay, this guy can really hit, but where the hell is he going to play? But now I think he is a legitimate middle of the order option. And even for 2023, the Orioles lineup is going to be good.
I don't want to get too excited, but it should be.
They are really, really talented. So hitting sixth in that lineup means a lot. It's a lot better than hitting six for the 2019 or 2020 Orioles or 2021 Orioles even. But yeah, Santander was great. I also just have to shout out my sweet, sweet Julio, who was 163rd ranked, ended up being a top 20 player. Might've been a top 10 player if not for injuries.
Julio who?
Julio Alcantara. Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, God. What an unbelievable steal he was. And again, somebody who came out of the gate a little slow, was dropped in multiple leagues because he did not have a very strong start.
Yep.
And again, if you held on to him, you were rewarded. If you dropped him and somebody else grabbed him, they were rewarded handsomely.
I can't blame you for dropping someone.
Bad start. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is too, and we can kind of talk about this a little bit when we get into rookies, the overwhelming majority of rookies have struggled in baseball lately.
Yes.
Until this year. It was totally understandable and justifiable to be like, look, I just don't know how much longer I can carry him with so many other quality outfielders. But those of you who are patient were rewarded handsomely.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a player you expect to rebound next year after a poor year this year.
Sure.
I'll start off with this one. I had a two person here, Nick Castellanos and Freddie Peralta, from a hitting and pitching standpoint. Look, Freddie Peralta was putting up strikeout numbers, eye-popping strikeout numbers in 2021. Injuries really derailed him this year, never really got a rhythm, never really got going. But I am all aboard the Freddie Peralta train for 2023. I am rooting that his value gets depleted a little bit more. Come on, knock him down backwards. Please doubt him, because what I saw last year was a special pitcher, and those strikeout numbers were just so gaudy. I will happily take him in 2023 drafts. And also Nick Castellanos, again, a player who maybe has some of the most boring 30 and 85 seasons of all time. Like you don't even blink an eye to him anymore. This year was a down year, but he will still be with the Phillies next year. He will still be in the heart of a fat lineup, a meaty lineup, so to speak, with so many of those big boys hitting in the middle of it. There should only be upside for him moving forward if he can stay healthy. I expect a huge bounce back year for him next year from someone who really didn't live up to expectations in 2022.
Yeah, I think those are both great calls. Castellanos, I think, had some bad BABIP luck, and Peralta, the injury stuff, I would expect him. Yep. Now, with pitchers, injury stuff can be a little different. I have to be honest with you. I was just a little distracted as I was looking through Twitter. President Biden just tweeted congratulations to Aaron Judge. So that's pretty pretty fun when the president is tweeting congratulations for you doing stuff. Yeah. So for me, mine is Spencer Torkelson. And the big thing for me is there are a lot of metrics here to like with Spencer Torkelson. His patience at the plate was outstanding. You take a look at some of the numbers in terms of like hard hit percentages and completely crazy. He just didn't drive the baseball. And here's a figure that Uncle Fufu, AKA Chris Crawford, my nieces call me Uncle Fufu. It's very cute until you actually get called Uncle Fufu. He has 2/3 of his extra space hits are doubles. So he has 16 doubles, 7 homers. He homered today and 1 triple. What that tells me is there's a lot of what normally happens is doubles turns to dingers as you get deeper into the league. And sure, that's not a lot of extra base hits, but it sounds to more to me like he should have been around a 15 homer player this year than the guy who hit 7 home runs. And he's just too talented. He is just way too talented of a dude. And like I said, as good as some of these other rookies are, the majority of rookies are going to struggle. And you have to keep in mind, too, how little experience Spencer Torkelson had. This was a guy who was the first pick in 2020.
Getting up really to the major league. Ran through the farm.
And with no minor league play to start the year. And good for the Tigers that they gave him that opportunity. I love seeing that. But he just wasn't quite ready and wasn't driving the baseball. Anybody who looks at Spencer Torkelson, not even just sees him swing, looks at the human being Spencer Torkelson should know, okay, if you're a professional baseball player, you have plenty of pop. I expect Spencer Torkelson to be much better. And that is something, again, kids, take a look at those double numbers and compared to homer numbers. And if they are, you know, a guy who has had above average power grades or something like that, be prepared for the breakout season the next year because it often translates.
Yeah, especially for young guys who are still growing into their their major league profile.
Or just getting confident swinging the bat hard at pitches down the middle of the plate. There are a lot of guys who just, you know, aren't quite ready to completely unleash. And I think I saw some of that from Spencer Enochs Torkelson, which is a very, very funny middle name.
Wait, is that really his middle name?
E-N-O-C-H-S. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It could be Enochs, but yeah, that's his middle name.
Either way, I don't know how to pronounce it. And either way, I would not have been, you could have given me 4,000 guesses. I'm close to that. Give me a player you expect to regress in 2023 after a great year this year.
It's another first baseman, and I don't like this because I've been a fan of this guy for a while. It's Nathaniel Lowe. And look, I'm not saying Nathaniel Lowe is going to completely go down the you-know-what hole. I just don't think we're going to see anywhere close to the numbers. Now, for those of you who rostered him, you have to be thrilled for a guy who hit 327 home runs and 849 OPS. I think he's closer to the player that we saw in his past that is like right around a 780 to 800 OPS with a decent average, a good on-base percentage. Now, look, I will say this. One of the things for Nathaniel Lowe was that he figured out was for most hitters, more patience is better.
Yeah,
I think Nathaniel Lowe figured out I've got to be more assertive because his walk number is way down from last year. He walked 80 times in 157 games last year. He's only walked 46 times, but his OPS is nearly 100 point, or excuse me, it's more like 70 or 80 points higher. That's still a massive difference and an OPS plus of 141. I still think he'll be close to a first baseman one, but like he's not to me this middle of the order type of bat that he was for most of 2022. There's a good handful of first basemen and another handful probably to go along with it that I'm probably drafting above him.
I think that's completely fair. Again, you live up to you have a great season. We're all for that, but I agree with you. I don't really see a lot of the future projections from him.
Yes.
Like I especially from a relatively deep first base crop, like it just, I know that he is someone who I think is going to be overvalued going into drafts next year.
Sure.
And I'm probably more than willing to let other people in my league go draft him. Speaking of someone who I am probably more than happy letting other people in my league go draft, we mentioned him a little bit before. Framber Valdez has had a special year, like no question about it. 16-6 with a 2.84 ERA, 1.16 whip, 184 Ks across 196 and a third innings, 25 straight quality starts. That is a major league record that we, again, probably did not talk about it nearly enough, and we'll probably never see it ever again. But that being said, the metric numbers aren't particularly great.
No.
16th percentile in average exit velocity, 18th percentile in hard hit percentage, 48th percentile in K percentage and whiff percentage, 44th percentile in walk percentage. Like the numbers aren't exactly jumping out at me from the metric standpoint. And while he continues to do what you could ask from a pitcher, does not give up, pitches six innings, does not give up more than three runs. And again, we know 4.5 ERA, we know all of that stuff. But again, from if you're asking for a pitcher that I can go out there and lock in every single game, regardless of the opponent, and that's what they're going to give me, I'm more than happy with that. But do I think he could do this again next year? If those are the Statcast metrics that are going to go behind him.
Right.
I got to assume that someone in my league is going to be like, hey, he was so good last year, I'm going to grab him early, and I am probably going to be just fine letting someone go grab. I just can't imagine that he doubles up this year the way that he did, or next year that he did this year. Couple other names out there. Brandon Drury, a special year this year, but again, I can't imagine. He's playing like a top 100 player. I won't draft him inside the top 100 next year.
No.
Anthony Rizzo, I don't know where he's going to be next year. He has an opt-out at the end of this year. The no shift rule could change this conversation a little bit, but
be very interesting.
It could be very interesting for players specifically like him, but he's had 35 home runs this year, going to be close to 100 RBIs, like doing everything that you could want. I just don't see him. If he signs with the Yankees next year, maybe. But if he goes to another team that doesn't have quite as favorable of a lineup around him and a short right field porch, I'm not quite sure if I'm willing to draft him as high as other people are. Both of those guys would be ones that I'd probably fade going into 2023 drafts.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Real quick on Valdez.
Yeah, yeah.
Valdez to me is like the definition of a pitcher that I love in real life and yes, not in love with.
I have that as my notes. I have one of those. That's my note.
Because look, he does limit hard contact extremely well in terms of avoiding home runs. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a weird thing here because his hard hit percentage is in the 18th, but his expected batting average is in the 59th percentile, which is well above average, and expected slugging is in the 81st percentile, and he avoids barrels. And it's just that type of guy that you just kind of expect a lot of weak fly balls hit to the left field and center field that you're just going to see over and over again. And that's fine, and he's a guy I'd love to stream against the bad lineups. But there are risks, and we kind of saw him like his last couple of starts.
Yeah, last two starts have been
those are the kind of like, and again, very small sample size, especially for a pitcher who set a very impressive record. I think, especially in today's day and age, and that curveball is still going to be a pitch that gives hitters an awful lot of trouble. But he just seems to me to be that definition of the guy that you want in real life. You kind of pass on a little bit in fantasy.
Yeah, no, if I'm going into a postseason game, this is the type of guy I want. But if it's the guy I'm trying to draft full season, like I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm willing to pay the price that other people might.
Yes.
Let's end the show with talking a little rookies here, because obviously you being our prospect guru, we gotta do a little recap here. Let's talk about the 2020 rookie class and let's look forward to the 2023 rookie class a little bit. So obviously in the 2020 class, a special year, Julio Rodriguez leading the line. I mean, no one truly proved themselves to be more of a superstar from this rookie class than Julio Rodriguez. And that contract, with all of its weirdness involved, only shows exactly how special a player he is. But outside of him, a really special year, Michael Harris II, who really stormed on the second, both offensively and defensively for the Braves. We already mentioned Spencer Strider, also for the Braves, who, again, everything I just said before, for overall baseball, he led the rookies and just about everything else on the mound. Bobby Witt, Hunter Green, Stephen Kwan, Adley Rutschman, O'Neill Cruz. Like, this was a really special year from rookies. And obviously the proficiency for all of them varies between, and each one kind of came into their own at different times and all the rest. But of all of those names that I mentioned, is there any one of them that you're particularly fading for next year? Because I'll be honest with you, I think as I'm looking for all of those names, I'm expecting a step up really from all of them into 2023 drafts.
I guess the only one I would be fading is, and it's going to depend on ADP for all of these guys.
Sure, of course.
But maybe fading Strider a little bit just because of the fact that he did have the injury this year, and I do wonder if Atlanta's going to be really careful with him and really manage the innings. But certainly a guy I want. If he's available in the middle rounds, I'll take him over like a guy like Framber Valdez, to be completely honest with you. Like, give me the ability to miss bats.
Give me the ceiling.
All of these guys, I think, are going to be really special. And just real quick, this 2023 class has a chance to be real good as well. Gunnar Henderson, Corbin Carroll. I think Anthony Volpe is going to get a chance to play early. Jordan Walker.
Francisco Alvarez.
Francisco Alvarez, who, you know, is getting a chance to play now, has really not looked the part, but you can't base anything on a small
cup of coffee.
And a pressure pressure situation.
Yeah. How about getting called up and being like, great, here's a three-game set against the Braves for the East. Like, okay, guy.
But yeah, Brent Beatty is going to be a guy I think who still has rookie eligibility. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be a good rookie class. Grayson Rodriguez, I think, is the pitcher that you're really going to. And again, some of that is going to have to do with health stuff as well. But there are a lot of guys still. In fact, I'm just looking at my list right now. My top six guys that I have for fantasy next year are either playing in the majors right now in September or have ETAs of 2023. So that is – it's going to be another good year. But don't expect anything like this year. Like, this was a special, special rookie class.
But I think that just about finishes.
We got two things to do. First of all,
we got two more things to do.
We have to do our favorite moments of 2020. This could be a 3-hour show. We're doing.
Oh, I mean, I'm happy to do it if you want.
Because look, you got your Aaron Judge that you can talk about.
Oh, I got my Aaron Judge. How much more favorite moments for the season can I possibly have? I got 60, 61, and 62, and I will go to sleep soundly with those.
So the main reason I'm doing this is because I have to say thank you to my buddy Jordan Schusterman of Suspended Family Barbecue.
Yep.
Because he called me up on Thursday and said, hey, Chris, do you want to come to the game on Friday? And I said, yes. And I have to thank two people. And I already, for those of you who follow our Molly What Monday show, I appreciate you. And you're going to hear me do the same thing. I have to thank Jordan Schusterman for getting me that ticket. And I have to thank Jordan Lyles of the Baltimore Orioles. And you might be wondering why I'm thanking Jordan Lyles of the Baltimore Orioles. Well, what he did was dominate your Yankees on Friday, Colin.
That he did.
And what it did was it made Cal Raleigh big dumper. Now, look, it would have been cool to just be in the stadium for the clinching moment. But what that game did by them winning was that actually made that the clinching game.
Yeah.
That home run that went off the window was the clinching moment. And it was so cool.
Talk to me about that feeling. Cause I thought about you. I thought about you in that moment as I watched that home run. And I went like, the good people of the Pacific Northwest,
the crowd,
deserve every single second of what's occurring right now.
I'm sure you've all seen the replays of it and how loud the crowd gets. And look, people can say whatever they want. When Seattle is behind something, I don't think there is much louder of a – I mean, you know about the Seahawks and how loud that stadium can get. Sure. But, like, see, the Seattle Mariners, when they're at their best, like, and there's a reason to get behind them, there's nothing quite like it. Like, it is just – like, I'm sorry, Colin, you know, 1995, which is all – like, I think you were, like, 3 years old or whatever when that happened, or maybe younger.
Maybe.
Yes. But you've probably seen that double and how loud that stadium gets from Edgar Martinez. Like, there's nothing quite like it. But, like, sitting there, and for those of you who go look at Jordan's video, you can see my arms going to hug him for just a brief second in the video, which has been retweeted by, like, every media thing. So everyone knows how fat my arms are. That's just great. But, I mean, that was special. But the specialest thing was walking back to my hotel room, because I got a hotel room because I didn't want to have to drive back the hour.
Right.
And getting to call my grandma.
Yep.
And talk to her about that moment, man. 21 years of waiting for this, man. Like, did they back into the playoffs? Yes. Did it take them creating new rules to get into the postseason? Yeah. But how big that moment was, and just seeing that crowd and hearing my grandma's voice and how excited she was to get to watch postseason baseball, it was worth the 21 years, man. It was just such a cool moment.
Chris, I thought about you the entire time as I watched that thing. I thought about your grandmother the entire time. I was so happy for both of you on that front. Sure. I didn't even know you were at the game until the next day.
But
I was so happy for both of you at that front and just everyone in the Northwest. Just the longest postseason drought in all four major sports, and to finally take that home. I don't care if it was backdoor. I don't care if it was for an extra wild card spot. It all counts the exact same.
It all counts the same. Yeah.
And you know what? I dare someone to look into the face of a true Seattle Mariners fan.
You should have really been there.
I dare you.
Guess what? You know how many of these teams make the playoffs in 1961 or something like that? I believe two. So everybody has some sort of asterisk that you can put. Like, there's just like the Houston Colt 45s would not be making the playoffs this year because of stuff that's going on. So there's always going to be somebody who complains about stuff like that. And I don't love it. I don't love that 40% of teams make the playoffs. But I love the fact that the Seattle Mariners made the playoffs for my grandma, and you can never take that away from me.
Look, we are here not for wins and losses. We are here for the moments that that matter to us.
Amen.
Me watching 61-62 for Judge mattered a lot to me. You guys making the postseason for the first time mattered a lot to me. For the good people of St. Louis and their Provel cheese, watching Albert Pujols do Albert Pujols 2003 things
unbelievable.
Was everything that matters. And that's the stuff that keeps us coming back. That is the stuff that keeps us going. So for everyone out there who had that moment one way or the other this season, whether it's a personal individual moments, but just between you and friends and family, or whether that is the type of moments that we're talking about right now, those are the things that keep you going. Those are the things that make this sport special. And that's the reason why you and I are here right now, 30 plus years after we were born, getting ready to continuing to get choked up over grown men hitting a baseball really far. And that stuff is what we're here for.
And then the second thing we got to talk about, it's kind of sad. This is our last show of the year, buddy.
It is. We will have a postseason preview show on Thursday right here with me, Chris, DJ, and Drew. But after that, that will be at least a temporary sayonara for me on this podcast. I know Chris, DJ, and Drew will be doing a postseason show throughout the postseason, but for episode number 100 for you and I, this has been one hell of a run, and I hope that we get to bring it back again come spring training. But either way, 100 episodes between you and I, it's bittersweet to have that milestone at the exact same time as potentially our last episode. But a thank you not only to you, Chris, for everything that you've done, but a thank you to literally everyone who has listened to us for more than 30 seconds. We could not genuinely appreciate you guys for being there as much as you have been, for the comments that you've written, for the DMs that you've sent on Twitter, for everything. It's really special, and it's really a thank you at the end of this regular season. A thank you guys for sticking with us, and hopefully we gave you some fantasy advice that made you very successful in your league and made you come back
here and there.
Eventually.
And like I said, Colin, we'll talk on Thursday, but it's been a great season. It was your everything is appreciated. Like we're talking about this like we're not going to be back in a couple of months or something like that. And we'll probably have some emergency podcast that we have to talk about.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge signing with Philadelphia. Boy,
don't even say that word. We're having a nice moment right now, Christopher. Don't even say such a terrible thing.
Yeah. So, well, fine.
Also,
we'll
could you imagine him in a Philadelphia outfield? Like they need any more meat out there? It's already the thickest outfield out there.
Oh my God.
Like they need a middle linebacker out there. That's all that would be.
Yeah. It's somebody to rush the passer to go along with those other two guys. But yeah, it's been an absolute blast, my friend, and I'm looking forward to Thursday, but I'm looking even more forward to whenever we get back to doing what we do.
Absolutely. But that now officially just about finishes up our show for today. If you enjoyed the show, then make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss an episode in the future. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to rate and review us. Love those 5 stars. And while you're at it, be sure to follow NBC Sports Edge on Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch to be informed of all of our live shows, Q&As, segments, articles, and more, so you can stay up to date on everything around the league and join in on the action. You can follow me on Twitter at @ColDon'tLie, and you can follow Chris at @Crawford_MILB. As I mentioned before, be sure to check back in Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern for a special playoff preview show with the whole game. Chris, DJ, Drew, and I will be there, so make sure you tune in and get fully prepped for the postseason. So until then, stay safe out there, and as always, thanks for the listen.
Dom Smith, 2023 Comeback Player of the Year.
Love it.